instant inspiration. An ideal spirit.
Yes.
An ideal spirit. What is an ideal spirit? Well, an ideal spirit is one that is
ideal.
It is one that is perfect. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body is a statement that we like to make. And the ideal is the archetypal. It is that which is the perfect, that which is the original purity and integrity of our spirit. How can we have an original purity and integrity for our spirit? Well, our ideal spirit is the perfect spirit that dwells in all. Now, we say we have never had an experience with our ideal spirit. We say we've never had an experience with our ideal mind or our ideal body, but we have. We have, every once in a while, been totally unaware of our body. And this total unawareness of our body was when we were in bliss. We were in the state of total unawareness. There was nothing in our body that was speaking to us. It was just there, and it was not speaking to us. And in our mind, there were no thoughts. Have you ever had that? I'm sure you have. Where you're just being, and no thought goes through your mind, no idea goes through your mind, no need, no pressure, no anything. You're just there, and you're in a state of a very pleasant feeling. Mm-hmm. And you don't even have a pleasant feeling. But it's just a nothingness, which is hard to describe. So, that's for the mind and the body. But now the spirit. How would we ever know anything about the spirit? Well, let me tell you. We know when we have a confused spirit. The spirit's not confused, but we are confused. We think that spirit, or the allness, is something to be sought for. We think the allness, the absolute, is something to be lived, to be expressed, and to be enjoyed. But you don't. You never enjoy absolute. You never enjoy allness. You never enjoy those things. You merely become aware of them, and you reveal them to yourself, and then you are completely empty of mind. You have no idea that you're doing it. You have no idea that you're enjoying those things. Now you say, well, what benefit is there to have it if you don't know that you're enjoying it? Well, I cannot tell you how you're going to feel when you are an accomplished musician, for instance. When you are playing in Carnegie Hall, and there are thousands of people out there just ripping up their programs and throwing them up in the air and saying, hooray, wonderful, encore, you know. And what goes through your mind? They're not encoring the musician, Beethoven, Bach, and Rimsky-Korsakov. They're not after those people. They're after you. You're there, and you have just given a masterpiece of performance, of interpretation of some piece of music, and you just set their hearts on fire. You set their worlds on fire. Your goosebumps all over the audience there. I mean, you could just, you know, have a look at all the little mountains all over everybody. And they're wonderful. Now, what do you feel when the audience is absolutely one with you, when they have just found you to be the most exquisite artist that they have heard in a long time, and they just, they don't want their money back. they would have agreed to pay more had they known how wonderful you were. So, what feelings go through your mind? What feelings go through your heart as a great performer before these people, not composer or anything, but well, you're composing a little bit by putting in your own way of thinking about it. But what feelings go through your mind? What attitudes go through your heart? What do you say, gee, I wish my mom were here? Do you say, oh, gee, I wish my dad or my family, and you know, and my school teacher, oh, my teacher said I would never make it as a musician. I wish she were here now to see me and hear me, you know, and how wonderful that would be. And do you say that? Those thoughts do not even enter your mind. They later might enter your mind, but not then. Right then, you have just given your best at that moment. You have given the finest presentation of your inner spirit, of your inner self. You merged with your divinity, if you will, to a certain degree, and you were able to perform. Now, I would say Mozart merged with his inner divinity as he would write music, not needing to erase one note. Every note fell directly into place. Every piece of music that he ever wrote was like that. And I mean, he was gifted. He was blessed. When he wrote music, he was not Mozart. He was God. Yeah. He was expressing himself on his highest and most beautiful plane. And no one could disturb him when he's writing music. Oh, someone might come and knock at the door, and he'd stop writing, and he'd close the book or put a bookmark in there, you know, and then come back 10 minutes or 10 hours later, and right where he left off, because the music was there. He knew how to tune into it. He knew how to be one with that music and that the grandness of what it was, and he knew how to do that now. How did he learn how to do that? Was he just born that way? Many people think that. Was he blessed that way? Did an angel come down to earth and say, well, little Mozart, let's shake up the world. Let's let your genius just be great. But I want to have fun too. Okay, you can be a little rascal too. But your musical genius is going to be great. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, was he a little rascal?
Yes.
Not any more than any other kid.
No.
But because he was so famous, his rascality took on a bigger note. And because he played in the homes of these very eminent people and was rascally with their help and with their kids, you know, with their daughters and stuff like that, you know, it gave him a little bit of a reputation. But if he had been a normal kid on the block, that would have been the normal thing to do that he was doing. But he was not normal because he had, in one part of his awareness, clued into the divinity that he was within. At one part of his consciousness, he moved right in on his divinity, and that's glorious. Now, did that make him a saint? Did that make him a fabulous spiritual being who was more glorious than anything else on earth? No. The Catholic Church never once thought of canonizing him. And yet his music is what the church is built on. His music is what all the religions in the world and all the private people, like our private collections here, we have this in our home and we play it. And we love his music. We love all these great musicians. Some are a little heavy sometimes, but we love all these great musicians. And how do we even touch, like Mozart did, the hem of his divinity and have it be revealed? How do we do that? And do you think, and I don't think so, but do you think Mozart was aware that he was touching this divinity?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he just being a channel for that divine self within him and just writing it down and saying, party, party! So he closed up the book and goes to a party. He comes back, okay, he goes back to work. And, you know, no big deal. Now, can an artist do that? Surely he can. An artist is painting and painting and painting, and then he runs out of paint, you know, or canvas or whatever it is, and he's got to stop. And so he stops, and then he comes back, and he's an artist again. Now, does he lose his talent just because he doesn't continuously 24 hours a day work at it? No. Do we lose our awareness of our divinity just because we're not every 24 hours a day working at it? No. Can we even be greater than we are in our divinity? Can we even be more tuned in to our spiritual self, the ideal spirit that we are? Can we really be tuned into that? We can. Now, how do we tune into that? How do we tune into it? Well, we say meditation. We say introspection. We say quiet times. We say listening to the divine within. And I say no. I say those are intelligent approaches, but those are not the approaches. The approach to be spiritually illumined and attuned is to turn yourself over 100% to something. To some dream, some goal, some some challenge, perhaps. You take these people who work with underprivileged children, for instance, and they can't get money enough to pay them for the headaches that they get in doing it and the heartaches that they get in doing it, because you see these children in these unhappy circumstances. There's no money that could ever pay that. But there is a feeling of inner commitment and an inner sharing and an inner love that transmits itself to the people that they're working with. And they know that. Those children know that. Those adults know that. They know when this is a committed person to their program. Now, we see literature where they're asking for donations and things like that, and we think to ourselves, oh, another donation thing. It's okay. Don't give it a thought. If it's not your thing, don't do it. But the thing is, it is the person's thing who's doing it. And they are dedicated. What was her name in Africa who was committed to the apes? Catherine Goodall or something like that. And she was just committed to those apes. I mean, who is committed to apes? You know, I mean, we got lots of human beings who would love to have some help and love to, well, the apes too, and other things too, and good musicians too. And my friend Jim Sanford, he dedicated himself to helping people who wanted to become actors who had no support, and he was able to find funding, and he was able to find an organization to get him going. Before that, he had been on drugs. Well, before that, he was not. But for a while, he was on drugs. And he got off the drugs. And then he went to commit himself to these people. Because I think he got to know a number of young, aspiring actors who were having difficulty, because they didn't have the right attitude of mind to move them into their acting work. And I work with people all the time in various areas of life that are committed to helping people, committed to helping dogs, you know, committing to helping children. I did a lot of that with the Crippled Children's Society and the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts and things like that. And I got to know a lot of people who really were committed to working with these young people. And they would come to me and they'd say, Herb, I want to help your Cub Scout troop, but I really am no good at taking kids on outings and stuff like that. And I say, what do you do? And he says, well, I'm a banker. And I said, well, why don't we take the kids into the bank and teach them about banking? And teach them all about banking, how money grows and how money gets. Oh, I'd love that. I know all about that. And he had a new dedication. He now was dedicated to this Cub troop, this Cub pack, to show them how banking works and how they could make money grow. And he was like, you know, lit a fire under him. He was ready to go. He was dedicated. Do you think that he got a glimmer of his spiritual spirit, of his ideal spirit? Yes, you bet you did. Now, did he know that? Did he equate it that way? No. Do we ever, half the time ever, do we ever equate those experiences that move us into that realm of spiritual illumination? Very seldom. We think it's just nice, you know. And like, you know, Greg is always a good illustration of a lot of things. But Greg will lay down on the floor, and he will cuddle and snuggle the dogs, or the cats, or whatever, or the kids, or anything that's down on the floor. And he'll just lay down there and roll with them and play with them and just love them. He doesn't know that that is a spiritual illumination that's taking place within him as he's doing that. His whole persona completely changes because he is now one with the kids, or one with the dogs, or one with the cats, or whatever he's got, you know. And he gives himself totally to it. And people might be looking on and saying, hey man, you're an adult, what are you doing flopping around there, you know. People don't say that. People think, gee, I wish I could have had the guts to get down there and do that too, you know. But they don't. But he does. And when he does, you can be sure that his ideal spirit is shining forth in all of its brilliance. And this is what each one of you do too. You shine forth in all of your brilliance. When you find something that is important for you to follow, I am sharing this philosophy wherever anyone wants it. And sometimes in having a school, we have a few hang-ups where people feel that we shouldn't teach the philosophy here. We should just spend money and just have a good time, which is not a bad idea. You just watch what you're strongly about. Because what do we teach here? Be yourself and have fun. We teach follow whatever you agreed to do. We teach be true to yourself and you won't be false to anybody. We teach be gentle, be loving to everybody. We teach and on, all this good stuff. And are there times where we might not be following that? Are there times when we might forget to follow the principle, to follow the rules? Well, if it were your organization, if it were your dream, if it were an emotional impact on your heart to work in this direction, you could never violate any rules. You could never go against any of the programs. You could never go against any, because if you didn't like it, you leave. But if you like it, you stay. So therefore, you want to give 100% of yourself to it. And if you give 100% of yourself to any program, you will experience spiritual illumination. Now, the program could be a bad program, you know, a dumb program, or what some people might not appreciate, but it's still your illumination. You know, this sounds terrible, but there is a genius among bank robbers, let's say, you know, criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a pride in what they do. And they have a spiritual illumination in what they do. They feel, wow, I really did it this time. I really put it over on them this time. I really did that. And that doesn't mean that is right. It merely means that dedicating yourself at any time, 100% to anything, you will experience spiritual illumination. If a lover were to dedicate him or herself 100% to being the greatest lover in the world to their beloved, no love story could ever be written that could match or that even could come near the relationship that they have. Because that 100% giving, that means you don't look at their faults, you don't look at their good points, you don't look at anything, you just love yourself so much that you love that person and that you share with that person everything and you don't expect that person to do anything. And anything the person does is gravy. This is what I teach about marriage. If we'll each give 100% of ourselves, then at least we got a marriage of 100%. Mm-hmm. And if the other person gives anything at all, then it's 100 plus. And that's mighty nice. And every marriage that any one person gives 100%, it'll be a lasting marriage. It'll be a happy marriage, a fulfilling marriage, a divine marriage. An ideal spirit? I think you've gotten the point on it now. Our next lecture will be an ideal mind. So look forward to that. That'll be this evening. We'll have an ideal mind. And let's see what wonders we can come up with relative to an ideal mind. I love you, and I see each one of you giving 100% of yourself to the thing that is your greatest, most fondest dream.